It's 12:37. Let's take a look at the weather now. A much quieter day today in the Midwest. Expect periods of showers with isolated thunderstorms across the region today as a low-pressure system pushes east into Indiana. Tonight and tomorrow, high pressure will bring quieter weather to the Midwest. A wind from the north will keep temperatures several degrees below average through the end of the week. High temperatures today will range from the low 50s near Lake Michigan to near 70 degrees in the Ohio Valley. Lows tonight will range from the 30s in Wisconsin to the low 50s in western Missouri. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, showers are likely. It will be cool with the temperature holding near steady in the low 50s. The wind out of the north at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers this evening, a low of 48 and a north wind at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a high of 65 and an east wind from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the low 55. The wind will be out of the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Saturday, mostly cloudy and warmer with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, a high of 78, and the wind out of the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Saturday night, mostly cloudy with a low in the mid-60s. Sunday and Sunday night, partly cloudy with a high in the mid-80s. And the low Sunday night in the upper 60s. Memorial Day, sunny with a high in the upper 80s. Lots of pools, no doubt, will be opening on Memorial Day. So, looks like a good day for a swim. Temperatures at noon, not very good for swimming. In Illinois and Indiana, they ranged from the mid-40s to 70 degrees in far southern Illinois. Rockford reported 57 degrees. It was 44 at O'Hare, 50 at Bloomington, 55 at Mattoon, 60 at Carbondale. Caro had the warmest reading at 70 degrees. South Bend and Lafayette reported 55 degrees at the top of the hour. It was 68 at Indianapolis, 67 at Terre Haute. Willard Airport reported 53 degrees at the top of the hour with light rain and fog. The dew point 50, the relative humidity 89. The wind out of the west, the wind out of the north at 20 miles per hour with gusts to 28, and the barometric pressure 29.71 and rising. And at 12:40, 51 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois, and we have light rain. So far this year, tornadoes have killed about 500 people in the U.S. Experts say that number would be much lower if everyone knew how to best protect themselves when a twister approaches. NPR's John Hamilton reports.
People who study tornadoes tend to have a detailed plan for surviving one. Harold Brooks is a researcher at the National Severe Storms Laboratory in Norman, Oklahoma.
The walk-in closet on our master bedroom suite is 6 inches of reinforced concrete with a steel door on it and a 6-inch cap on top of the closet, and we can get in there with children, pets, valuables, and things like that.
Brooks says a shelter like that protects you from things like a 2x4 ripped from a wall and propelled by winds that can exceed 200 miles an hour.
It's like getting hit by a baseball bat. Bricks that fly through the air are also causes of major injuries, and so it's all of those things as structures start to fall apart and produce lots of 6-inch to 2-foot-long missiles that can hit you or impale you, and that's pretty much how people get hurt.
Brooks says people who don't have a shelter can still do a lot to protect themselves.
Get low, put walls between you in a small room if possible, a closet, an interior bathroom, a small hallway. Once you get in there, something like a bicycle helmet or a football helmet on your head, and that can help dramatically improve your chances of surviving without significant injury.
But a lot of people don't do any of that. Instead, they do things like opening all the windows, thinking it will prevent their house from exploding in the low-pressure eye of a tornado. Brooks says that's a myth, and open windows can cause another problem.
Because once the wind gets inside of your house, it essentially can start to lift the roof up off the house.
People in cars make mistakes, too. Robin Tanamachi is a researcher at the Center for Analysis and Prediction of Storms in Norman. She spent the past 8 years chasing severe storms in radar trucks.
One thing that we've observed quite frequently is that people will try to shelter under highway overpasses, and that's a tremendously bad idea.
It's also become very popular, thanks to a video from 1991 that shows a news crew hiding under an overpass as a tornado goes by. That strategy doesn't usually work. Since then, several people who've tried it have died. And research shows that an overpass can act like a wind tunnel and actually make you more vulnerable. The best thing to do if you're in a car is drive to a building. Fast food restaurants are good because they usually have a walk-in cooler that will work as a shelter. Tanamachi says driving away from a tornado can also save your life, but you shouldn't try to outrun the twister, as many people do. Instead, pick an escape route that takes you 90 degrees from the storm's path. And Tanamachi says drivers need to plan for the worst.
If you find yourself in a vehicle and unable to escape from the tornado, abandon the vehicle and try to get into a nearby ditch or a culvert. Protect your head and face. And don't look at the tornado as it goes by, because you may be impacted by debris.
For scientists like Tanamachi, these safety steps aren't just theoretical. After all, she lives in Norman, Oklahoma, which is in the area known as Tornado Alley. On Tuesday evening, Tanamachi was taking part in a workshop at the National Weather Center in Norman when the twisters appeared.
They actually did issue a tornado warning that affected our building, and we all had to evacuate down into the tornado shelter for a while.
Until the tornado subsided a few miles away. John Hamilton, NPR News.
Economist Nouriel Roubini was one of the few people to predict the 2008 financial crisis. After that, investors, central bankers, and political leaders followed his views. On Wall Street, his gloominess earned him the moniker Dr. Doom. What does he think of the economy now? Aaron Elstein of Crane's New York Business teamed up with member station WNYC for this report.
There is no light at the end of the tunnel, and now there is a vicious circle with the real economy contracting and the financial sector contracting, and everything is feeding on each other.
That's Nouriel Roubini in full Dr. Doom mode, speaking on the PBS NewsHour the same day that Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy in 2008. And this is Roubini earlier this year, sounding a much more optimistic note at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland.
There is a global economic recovery, both in advanced economies and emerging markets. The risk of an outright double-dip recession in advanced economies and the risk of outright deflation are lower than they were last year.
Roubini thinks his audience will accept his move to the sunnier side. When I asked him about this, he argued he's no perma-bear about the economy. As the facts on the ground change, so will his views. The only way to maintain clients and credibility, he said, is to call things as you see them. Sounds sensible, but will it work?
I became known as Dr. Doom.
This Dr. Doom is Albert Wojnalauer. 30 years ago, he was one of the most widely followed analysts on Wall Street, earning his nickname because he warned, accurately, that rising interest rates would hurt stock prices. He was so influential that when he and another analyst known as Dr. Gloom, Henry Kaufman, changed their minds in the early 1980s and forecast better times ahead, it was page one news in the New York Times. Yet as Wojnalauer's views got sunnier, his audience got smaller. His phone rang less often. His forecasts were as accurate and insightful as before, but people simply weren't as interested.
There was a certain kind of typecasting. So far as the clientele was concerned, they were disappointed whenever I didn't deliver end-of-the-world kind of forecast.
Is today's Dr. Doom doomed to lose his audience in the same way? One sign Roubini no longer holds the sway he once had. Google searches for his name are way down. New York web research firm Insider Monkey found that searches for Roubini's name this past February were 75% lower than the previous spring, and since then, they've fallen another 20%. Insider Monkey's research finds that when investors are fearful and stocks are falling, they seek out Roubini's opinions. But when investors are feeling good and confident, like they have for several months, they're less interested in hearing what Roubini has to say. Think of it this way. Roubini is a big opera buff. He knows people loved the legendary Luciano Pavarotti when he sang classic opera songs like this. But when Pavarotti made an album of pop songs, he bombed. Fortunately for Roubini, there are signs his audience may be ready for Dr. Doom again. Oil prices have soared, which threatened to cool the economic recovery in the U.S. And lately, Roubini has been warning that China's superstellar growth pattern is unsustainable. Perhaps Dr. Doom won't have to change his tune after all. For NPR News, I'm Aaron Elstein.
It's 12:47. Car buyers will soon see a new window sticker detailing each vehicle's fuel efficiency and greenhouse gas emissions. The government unveiled the stickers yesterday. NPR's Elizabeth Shogren has more on that story.
When you're shopping for a car, the new window sticker will tell you how much more or less you'd spend on fuel over 5 years for that particular car compared to the average vehicle. It will also tell you how the car rates on smog and greenhouse gas pollution. David Friedman from the Union of Concerned Scientists says it will help a shopper select a car that saves fuel and money.
Maybe it costs a couple hundred dollars more, but if I'm going to save a couple of thousand dollars on gasoline, even in just 5 years, it's pretty obvious that that's a really good choice to make.
Environmental groups say the government would have sent a clearer message if the stickers included grades A through F based on how far a car goes on a gallon of gas. Friedman says the auto industry lobbied hard against those grades.
It's really frustrating that the auto industry had that much influence on the process.
Friedman hopes the industry doesn't get its way again when the government proposes new fuel efficiency standards for each company's fleet of vehicles. The Obama administration is considering increasing the standard to somewhere between 40 and 60 miles per gallon by 2025. Wade Newton from the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers says too tough a standard would hurt the auto industry.
The idea of producing an automobile that the consumer can no longer afford serves no one well.
The government's proposal is expected in September. Elizabeth Shogren, NPR News, Washington.
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
Congratulations, Champaign-Urbana. Nearly 900 of you rode your bike to work or school on May 3rd. More than half of you were new participants in Bike to Work Day. And 14% of you used bicycles as transportation to and from work for the very first time. For bicycling tips from area residents, visit willconnect.org/projects.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 26th of May, 2011. It's the birthday of the documentary photographer Dorothea Lange, born in Hoboken in 1895. Contracted polio when she was a kid, developed a permanent limp as a result, moved to San Francisco. She was taking photographs of well-to-do people when, during the Depression, she started taking photographs of men on breadlines and striking workers and the homeless. She's now remembered for her photograph of the Dust Bowl wife, entitled Migrant Mother, taken in 1936. It's the birthday of the father of modern Russian literature, Alexander Pushkin, born in Moscow, 1799, worked in every literary form, lyric poetry, narrative poetry, the novel, short story, drama.